Hi there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Morehead State University President Dr. Jay Morgan. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Ah, it's great to be with you, Leanne. Beautiful day on campus today, and students are moving about at, at a pretty good pace this morning.
Yeah, it is the second week of classes here at Morehead State, and they're back in the dorms and in the buildings, but campus actually looks a lot different this year in the middle of a global pandemic. First, let's talk about some rules and guidance for safety that the university put in place for campus. I was really happy to see so many students wearing masks this week, even when they're outside, so it seems like they're adjusting to the new normal pretty well.
I think they are. I want to first pause for a minute here at the onset and thank our campus, that's faculty, staff, and students. From my perspective, I think 99% of everyone is a team player. They're doing a great job. I'm even seeing students wearing masks outside. We just ask them to wear them in the buildings, but as I sit here this morning looking out my window, there's students going by with masks on up and down the sidewalk. So I think our students are taking this seriously. I think our faculty and staff, and we've really adopted what we think is a real team push, and it's all centered around layers. And the recommendations that we receive from not only our local health officials, but also the now infamous Dr. Stack, who you see on the evening pressers with the governor, the concept of layers is really around, there's not a single bullet that will magically safeguard your campus. And his recommendation was to put as many things into play as possible. And thus we have put in play, you know, the requirement for masking in all buildings, including during classrooms and labs. If you go in over at ADUC and, you know, get a burrito for lunch, you need to put your mask on. We're taking temperature, not only among faculty and staff, but also, you've probably seen around campus, some of our student nurses are out. They're not everywhere at all times, but we randomly have them out at some of the buildings taking temperatures. We've reduced our class sizes. We were already known as a campus with a very low faculty to student ratio, but we've even lowered that even more so. We moved a number of additional courses this fall online and hybrid. We have PPE distributed across campus to the degree that we can. So we're putting as many layers in place as possible, hopeful to limit our number of cases.
I thought it was interesting. There's even in each building certain, you go in one part of the building, you exit through a different part of a building, you go up certain stairways and down other stairways. It's very interesting the way that the students who are physically in the classrooms are separated to try to keep everyone safe.
But it is. I've had to retrain my brain a few times as I've been going in some buildings and saying, oops, I can't go in that door. I got to go in the other side.
Right. So. And the signage is helpful. But again, these students are kind of just rolling with it. I mean, it's different and it's an adjustment. But it seems like the students have really just taken it up and gone, OK, this is how life is and we're going to go.
I am extremely complimentary of our students. We've had just a few small cases of students who, you know, sometimes maybe just didn't understand things fully, or we needed to chat with them a little bit. But I'm seeing horror stories in news accounts at other campuses across the nation. You've probably seen those as well. And as I look at our campus, even though, you know, we're having to redo a whole bunch of our processes and communication patterns, and none of it's perfect, but I'm very pleased at what our campus is doing so far in relation to what I'm seeing elsewhere. So hope we can keep this up. We're doing a good job.
Now, I'm on campus every day, and I go out and about at different times of the day. Sometimes I just take I'll take a lap around campus just to kind of get out of the office for a minute, get some fresh air. And it seems like there are fewer students physically walking down the streets. But I know enrollment is pretty steady from last fall. So let's talk a little bit about how class schedules and locations and even how those classes are being taught has been adjusted.
Well, it's interesting that you ask. I'm going to take you all the way back to March when all this came about around spring break. As you know, we unfortunately had to exit campus very abruptly, like the rest of the world did back right after spring break. And from that point on, things have just felt strange. I've been in higher education in Kentucky for 2+ decades. All the way from, an entry-level faculty member to a staff member to an administrator and so forth. And I've never quite felt some of the vibes that I felt from campus going all the way back to late March and in early April. The summer was very strange. Normally we're teeming with camp members who are here, and there's soccer camps and Governor Scholars and Upward Bound. It was four or five of us and a couple of squirrels on campus, literally. And it just felt weird. So you transpose that over to our beginning of classes, really around, I guess, August 17th. So we've been at this about a week and a half now. And while I'm kind of like you, I see students moving about, it just feels a little bit lighter. And I think I would attribute that to a couple of things. Number one, I think we have a few more online courses than we normally would. So there may be students who are here in town, but they're about four or five streets over in an apartment taking an online course and not physically coming to Combs or Breck or, another classroom building here. They're not coming in the library, they're remoting in. And, you can do that from just about anywhere in modern day technology. There's probably a less amount of students who want to go into ADUC and, go to Moe's and stand in line, So I've been through ADUC a couple of times, and it still has that lunch bustle like it always did. It's just a little different, but I think students are being cautious. They may be moving around at times when, there's a little bit less movement on campus. There are so many different processes and changes in place, including classes. I just think it's looking and feeling different, but also to looking at our residence halls. We normally, in any fall semester, will have somewhere between 2,900 and 3,000-ish students in our residence halls living and learning on campus. And we intentionally changed that this fall to be somewhere around 2,600. Because we wanted to lighten our load just a touch. We didn't want to empty it out. We didn't want to go down to 1,200, but we wanted to reduce it some. So we reduced about 350 or so. I think right now today, the latest count that I got, we're somewhere just shy of 2,600, and that's probably also compounding why you're seeing maybe a few less students on campus. They may be back home in Fleming County or Lexington or somewhere in Ohio or other places taking an online course. So, and that's okay. We're trying to employ as many different gambits as we can this fall.
And then also, I know that some professors have been moved into completely different spaces where they would normally be in a small classroom or one of the normal quote unquote spaces within the university. Now they're teaching in an auditorium or in a much larger space in order to accommodate the class sizes.
Absolutely. Who would ever have thought we would have used the ballrooms in our student center for classrooms? But we are. And the staff over in ADUC, Tanya and her staff have done a wonderful job retrofitting the upper floor. The used to be ballrooms and meeting rooms for clubs and organizations. Those are classrooms now. And they make wonderful classrooms. But it's probably changed some of the traffic patterns around campus as well. Instead of getting your coffee at Starbucks on the first floor, stopping by the library for a moment and then going down to Breck for class, you may be going to Starbucks on the first floor, sitting outside at a picnic table, drinking your coffee, and then going to class on the third floor of ADUC. So it's really rerouted our campus a lot. And I think people are adapting pretty well. And you do see a lot of new venues. We're using auditoriums all across campus that we really never used for classrooms before.
Right. Now, one of the big parts of campus life everywhere, and this is something that all the colleges are discussing right now, is sports. The sports organizations, different groups are saying, yes, we're going to play, no, we're not going to play. So tell me a little bit about competition for fall sports and what our athletes are doing right now.
Well, our student athletes have also had to modify just like the rest of our students have. And really all of our groups are having to modify. Our Greek groups are modifying, our band has had to modify, and that carries over also too to our student athletes. We play football in the Pioneer Football League, the PFL. And the PFL, as you know, is a cross-country football conference. We play universities in San Diego, New York, Florida, North Carolina, and a lot of points in between. And while that is good in, any normal year, it brought a lot of challenges with travel this particular fall. And there was just no way to put a football team on an airplane and send them five, six, eight states away. And there was no way to bring a team from California here to play as well. So the conference and the commissioner made the decision fairly early to push the potential opportunity to play to the spring. And I think that final decision probably will be delayed for a while, just watching the environment. Moving over to the Ohio Valley Conference, OVC, which most of us are familiar with. For the rest of our fall sports, that was a long drawn out discussion among all the schools, the commissioner of the conference, the board, et cetera. And I think at the very end of the day, safety really took the final straw, and that the thought pattern was, we might be able to play golf. You can distance on a golf course that's 200 acres and people are spread out 40 and 50, 40 and 50 feet apart. But did we need to put them in a van or a bus and let them travel to hot spots? So while we probably could have done some localized golf tournaments here, maybe Northern Kentucky, down the road a little bit, it would have been very difficult to send our golf team, two, three, four states away. So even those low contact sports brought about logistical problems. So the thought pattern, I think, among the OVC was, let's just push everything to the spring. Let's keep all fingers crossed that, we'll have some breakthroughs and maybe we can have some type of limited season. That does bring a lot of affiliated problems, such as homecoming. Not only am I a little disappointed that we don't have fall sports, because it's a great time for students and local and regional community and moms and dads to come watch their students or loved ones play. But, there's the damper on homecoming, there's a damper on other affiliated activities, and it's one of those changes that we'll get through. I'm told, and I don't have the full history behind this, but there's been only a few times over the many decades of our university history that we've not had a football team playing. And I think maybe during World War II was a time period. I need to check that a little bit more with our historians, but I've heard a few accounts of that. So we'll get through it and we'll make next year's homecoming even better.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
Protesters in the streets demanded justice after George Floyd was killed by a police officer. His death was a gruesome example for protesters of the day-to-day injustices that Black Americans face. For many white Americans, Floyd's death was a long overdue awakening about the racism that still shapes our lives. Join us for part two of our special report, Summer of Racial Reckoning, The System, from NPR News.
Friday night at 7 on WMKY.
And we're back here on Open Mic here at Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with the president of Morehead State University, Dr. Jay Morgan. Thanks again for being here.
Great to be with you, Leanne.
I wanted to talk a little more specifically about coronavirus cases on campus. I know we've had students, faculty, staff test positive, and the numbers in your latest report were a little different than the numbers that have been reported by the county. So tell me, how many have we had so far, and how are those numbers going to be reported differently coming up pretty soon?
Sure, be glad to. First, let me say that we're very appreciative of our local health department. We're also appreciative of all the agencies. St. Clair Healthcare has been wonderful to work with. It might seem on the surface that it's very easy just to pop numbers out and here they are. But it's not quite that easy when you start digging down a little bit. Our commitment to not only the campus, but trying to make a commitment to our students and others to try to keep them apprised of our numbers doesn't always come with exact numbers. And I want to explain a little bit of the reasons why. And we're seeing this at other universities as well. There are testing processes with St. Clair Healthcare. A student or a faculty member or staff member here at the university could also go to any number of clinics around town. I think there's another clinic or two that you can go to be tested. There are individuals, both student and employee, who live in other counties. So if I'm a student or an employee and I live in Carter County or Fleming County and I go to that local testing site, how do we count some of those cases as well? So at any given time, there's probably going to be a little bit of differential in case counts. So backing up to about mid-July, I think it was around the July 20 or 22 or so, we started tracking as best we could the number of cases. And that brought a lot of questions forth of, okay, somebody's living in Carter County, but they work at MSU. How do you count that case, by example? Then there's the lag in the numbers that might come from the health department to us. And everybody's doing, I think, the best that they can. So the numbers I'll give you now are very general. They might differ just a little bit. They're going to differ a little bit, if you ask 3 days from now. From mid to late July to right at the start of school, so about August 17, 18, 19, we had about 3 employees. We had 4 or 5 on-campus students and roughly 10 off-campus students. And it's also important to note that those were positive cases to the best of our ability that we were able to track. That does not include individuals who may have been asked by a contact tracer or from a precautionary standpoint to isolate and or quarantine. And there's even definitional differences between isolation and quarantine. Mm-hmm. So fast forward a little bit, and we sent our campus our updated numbers as of about August 25th or so. In that between August 19 and roughly the 25th, again, differences in day, we had an additional employee, about 7 or so on-campus students and 6 off-campus. And I know any report that you might look at has some slight differences in numbers. To my knowledge, there's no intent to try to mislead anybody. But as information kind of moves from agency to agency, and when the counts are taken and delivered, you'll probably see some variation. And even Dr. Stack in Frankfurt, who tries to keep up with a lot of numbers, even says, as schools try to track this and agencies try, that there are differentials in the numbers. But one thing that I think that will be in place soon, and we're vetting this week, all the state universities, so us and the rest of the publics, as well as the 16 community college campuses across the state, we're all trying to move to one template. And that's been a little bit of the reason of why we've held off in putting these up on our site, because there's differentials in the numbers and we don't want to report wrong numbers. So what we've been trying to do is just email it to the campus until that template is done. And I think an email went out to all of our students and employees sometime yesterday, trying to update them around the numbers. I'm hopeful pretty soon that this new template, which will be a statewide template, it's my understanding that so we can get some consistency across the state, that the health departments for the counties that have universities and colleges in them will report the health department number to that template on either a daily basis or an every other day basis.
Right.
And I think that's going to create some consistency all across the state. And that way the numbers are coming strictly from one agency, the health department. That still may call into question what happens for the employee that tests positive but lives in Carter County.
Right.
How do you count that person? So
and
there's
the
always
and also the students that go
variation.
Home.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
There's also students who live on campus who test positive and then go home because they've tested
Correct.
Positive. So how do you
Correct.
Count them as well? I know that there's been universities across the country that opened up just like Morehead State did and then had to move to all online instruction after opening. Part of the planning process for reopening Morehead State safely, I'm sure, included planning for a lot of what-ifs. Is there a number of positive cases or a situation that could happen that would send Morehead students back to a fully virtual experience?
Well, that's a million-dollar question with about a million variables, literally, but a very valid question. As we were working through the summer, we filed a number of plans with the Council on Post-Secondary Education. They were vetted, you know, through the state health networks, et cetera, in three phases. We're now in our third phase, which is the fall semester and reopening. Unfortunately, we are unable at this point to lay out, here's the plan to go fully online or online for 2 weeks or take a 3-day pause, you know, any type of interruption in specific detail. In putting together what some people might call a plan B, there's really a plan B, C, D, E, F, G, A, and the list goes on. And it's very difficult to, you know, to put them on paper and say to our campus, here's the plan. Some options that we might have. So that's how I'd like to approach it, is from an option standpoint. If we see an extreme number of cases, and right now I wouldn't call our numbers extreme. If we see an extreme spike in numbers, some options that we have would be maybe a 1 week pause of classes. Maybe it's a week and a half. Maybe only laboratories meet and the lectures go online. Maybe we back up the hours of our student center, our recreation center, our library, some of those public venues, we shorten the hours. So there are some compression pieces that we think we might utilize if we just need to put some brakes on it, but not go fully online for a whole semester. Are there specific pinch points? We're watching the number of cases primarily.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have here on Open Mic. Dr. Jay Morgan with Morehead State University, thank you so much for being here. I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Leanne.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Morehead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.